720 WGN, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand is out today. I am John Hanson, and I'm filling in. And Kim, I imagine you'll want to jump in. If we get over that 20,000 mark, I feel like a kid approaching Christmas Day with that 20,000. Everyone's talking about it.
I think Orion is sitting there watching the numbers tick.
All right, well, you both can jump in.
We will let you know.
I've got everything potted up. Anyone jump in, whoever wants to. And, of course, we're going to start things off, as Steve does every Tuesday, talking, going a little bit more in depth into the stock market and things along that line. And for that, we go to John Najarian. And John, before we get started, first of all, thanks for joining us, even though Steve has the day off. And John, I'm so excited. I've met someone else that spells their name J-O-N.
There you go. Did we both have Swedish parents or what?
Norwegian, my end. But yeah, same sort of thing.
Norwegian, okay.
So we're all waiting, John Najarian, with this 20,000 number, and it seems like a big number to people. Obviously, in the media, we love to talk about it. Do investors feel that way? Is this a big deal to them?
I think it's bigger, John, because it gets us onto the front page instead of just onto the money and finance pages of a newspaper. And it is likely, unless there's some horrible event like there were yesterday in Europe, it's likely to be a headline grabber, both in radio and on television. So I think anything that focuses individuals into stock market related things is likely to draw more people into the markets. Investors in particular have probably been underinvested in the stock market, overinvested in bonds. That's worked out well for them up until now, John, or at least up until the election. And it hasn't worked out very well since the election because money's pouring into assets other than bonds, and the bonds have been suffering for it.
So I imagine, yeah, a lot of people, not necessarily new people to the market, although I'm sure you're going to get some of those as well, flooding on in when you get that 20,000 number. The question I have, and you kind of touched on this yesterday, was this the terrorism side of things. And I seem to remember it wasn't much more than a couple years ago when we'd have a national or an international event like we saw a couple of them yesterday, you would see a dip in the market, but there wasn't really any effect. Are we becoming almost just so used to this? I mean, it's a terrible thing to say, but does that has terrorism eased off a little bit in terms of something that will drive the market down? Are we unfortunately so used to it these days?
Yes, the latter. We are more used to it. When it's an outlier, as it was 9/11, for instance, and subsequent attacks in Europe or in America, it obviously has an impact both on investor sentiment and, in some cases, on elections. It'll definitely have an impact, I think, John, on the elections that are going on soon in Italy, in France, as well as in Germany. And it could change the political landscape in those countries. And that could be yet another driver for our markets.
People call this the Trump rally as we get close to 20,000 and over it. And obviously, terrorism is one of those factors out there that's a little bit nebulous. You never know exactly how the markets could react, even if there is some easing of overreaction to those sorts of things. What other things would investors be a little bit wary of? I mean, when you have a bunch of people flooding in, a lot of people see that as great news. But me, I'm a natural cynic, and I know that these stock markets go up and down. What concerns do you have as we go into 2017 and a Trump presidency, that obviously this number is not going to keep on going up?
Well, I guess the major concerns would be how much of what they anticipate that the president-elect and the Congress will do, will they actually get accomplished, and how quickly will that happen? If it's something that in the first 100 days, an awful lot of what's on the table right now and being thought is nearly a sure thing, if that does happen, the market goes significantly higher. If instead there are focus on fewer things getting done over those first 100 days, and instead it becomes 200 days, and then it becomes the whole first year, and then you're heading into the midterms and so forth, then I think the market will not just take a pause, but will actually use that as a time for a correction.
Yeah,
so if I had a crystal ball, John, mm-hmm. I'd tell you for sure, but right now Certainly the momentum is on Mr. Trump's side.
It's interesting, John, you say that, because I feel like it also depends on which levers kind of get pulled after January 20th, 2017. Obviously, there's a lot of talk of a stimulus package, and that's obviously got investors excited. But if it doesn't stimulate the economy quite as much as people think, or if, like you said, it doesn't happen at all, that could cause the market to come down. But also, this situation, he was harping President-elect Trump on trade situations and changing the trade of things. I imagine that has investors a little more on the worried end than the excited end. So I guess it kind of matters what comes out of this administration, exactly which levers are pulled.
Sure. I mean, ultimately, supply and demand do drive markets. That may sound very elementary, but if you're talking about repatriation of $3 trillion that are overseas and they come back into our country, not come back in the way of a loan, people issue bonds or whatever in the EU to bring that money back, but actual bring that money back to the United States. And then you talk about more investment dollars available because taxes are lower. And then you talk about that stimulus program, John. I think you could see just a very significant upside move out of the market, even after this significant rally that we've had since the election. So those are three pretty big drivers, and it takes an awful lot to knock us off the rails if indeed we get most of those three through in that first, let's call it, 6 months of 2017.
John, you started with a very simple start to that answer, elementary. You are allowed to keep it as elementary with me as you can, as I'm filling in for Steve Bertrand, of course. What you guys always like to do on Tuesday is a couple stock tips. What do you got for us today?
Well, Nike has earnings tonight, as does FedEx. Nike's the one I like a lot more. I think they'll both do well, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But Nike is an underperformer in the market, and it's tougher and tougher to find those. It's down on the year. I think that's still a great American company, and I think they obviously their international footprint is very strong. So strong dollar does tend to hurt them. However, buying or not manufacturing the shoes here and buying them in stronger dollars in Vietnam and in Korea and in wherever else their factories are around the world, Pakistan and so forth, is a big positive for Nike. So I'm bullish into the earnings tonight, and we were buying Nike today for clients.
John Najarian, you can catch him on CNBC and MSNBC, or a wealth of knowledge when it comes, of course, to the economy and stock tips and all that sort of stuff. So, John, we really appreciate your time. And people can find you on Twitter, right?
Yep. It's just J-O-N Najarian, N-A-J-A-R-I-A-N.
I just wanted you to spell John the correct way one more time for everyone to hear that. John Najarian, thank you so much for joining us. John Hansen filling in for Steve Bertrand, and I'm joined by Andrew Herman, DNA Info's senior editor. Andrew, it's so nice to have you in the chair that I used to sit in during this segment for openings and closings.
That's right. You're kind of like the Davy Crockett of this position, right? You were the pioneer for getting DNA Info to talk about business stories, and you moved on.
Onto other things.
I moved in.
Yeah, there you are.
And that's the way it works in this business.
I've never been called Davy Crockett, I will tell you, for many different reasons. And he brought me my old business cards from the office as a Christmas gift. Thank you.
Yeah.
This will be great kindling here during the cold winter months.
Yeah. What percentage of business cards do you think never actually get passed out in the world?
Right. Well, this whole box, I'll tell you that much.
Right.
So, Andrew, we talk about openings and closings and things going on at a local level. And I wanted to start with this Filipino bakery called Red Ribbon, because I remember when this place, Jollibee, opened up. A Filipino restaurant joint opened in the Skokie or one of the suburbs.
Yes.
It was a huge deal, and now we got a bakery coming up.
Yeah, so this is all part of the Seafood City complex at 5033 North Elson Avenue. We talked about this on the show before, and it's an enormous Filipino-focused supermarket, and so like you can get some unusual foods like fried pork, shrimp and sweet potato fritters, yam ice cream, and it's kind of one of these big stores in which you have shops within a shop. And so this week they unveiled their bakery, the Red Ribbon, and like with a lot of Filipino desserts, a lot of it is very heavy, sugary stuff, very sweet stuff.
I imagine, and I think I remember talking to Patty about this, Patty Wetley, mm-hmm. who covers the northwest side or the north side near Lincoln Square, that there, I mean, there's a huge amount of Filipino people living on the north side of Chicago and all over the Chicagoland area, and there haven't been that many bakery stores that are centered to them.
Right, right. So this is a California-based company, and they've been opening up these big places across the country one by one. As you point out, there's one in the northern suburbs, and then this one opened on the north side. But I was looking at some of the things that Patty wrote about the bakery. They have a mango cake. Sounds
Ooh,
good. Ooh,
that does sound good.
And they have something called an ubi overload cake.
What is ubi?
Well, it's made with purple yams, so the cake looks very purpley.
Huh.
And people think that it's food coloring. It's not. It's the color of the yams.
Oh, interesting.
But it's very sweet, and there's pictures of it on our website. And as you point out, the Jollibee fast food place that they have in the northern suburbs, that's also coming to the one on the on Elston Avenue, and they're famous for their fried chicken. So a lot of people are eagerly anticipating the opening of the Jollibee.
That's Red Ribbon, a Filipino bakery at 5033 North Elston in Seafood City, which, by the way, is a great name for a big place like that.
Yeah,
Seafood
it's
City.
Huge. It's an old Kmart.
That's really Wow.
Yeah, that's how big it is. Right.
Wow. So let's shift gears to the north side of in the Wrigleyville neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I think obviously everyone has talked about the changes that are going on, but right before I went to one of the playoff games, I got off just out of my Uber Belmont, walked north on Sheffield, and where the old 7-Eleven was, I know that it wasn't there anymore because I was trying to find an ATM.
Yeah.
And that's always where I would go. And it's kind of the lesser talked about spot of the changes that are happening to Wrigleyville. And now we have some more details.
Right. So that's the Addison and Clark complex, if you can say that.
Mm-hmm.
Nine stories tall. It's going to have 148 apartments, 150,000 square feet of retail. And this month they announced that there's going to be a Lucky Strike bowling alley in there, 30,000 square feet. So you'll have a big bowling alley right across the street from Wrigley Field.
I guess it's no surprise with all the work they're doing on the plaza. I mean, Wrigleyville, and especially, I mean, you could go even within those three blocks around Wrigley Field, they're really creating an entire day experience, especially with these day games. You can go there and then find somewhere to go right after the game.
Right, and so this bowling alley is also going to have a music venue in it. So you'll have, you know, Metro down the street, Cubby Bear has music, some other the smaller bars will have music, and now this is the latest in the on the music scene, like you say, right across the street, just south of Wrigley Field.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago that, so this must have been obviously October, when it was simply a flat pavement with some fence around it. What's the timing on this one?
I think the bowling alley is supposed to open sometime next year.
Oh, really? That quickly?
Yeah. So they're working hard.
Yeah, and really quickly before we go, I wanted to mention, because I've done this before, at Kaiser Tiger in the West Loop. The curling season is back in full force.
Unbelievable. 1415 West Randolph, it's a bar. They usually have a bocce ball court out back, and a couple years ago they said, what can we do in the wintertime? And they set up an ice curling, I don't know what you call it, field?
I don't know, court? Pitch?
Right.
The curling pitch.
So we have a video on DNA Info, shows you how they build it. But if you're into curling, which is, you know, throwing the big stone down the slab of ice.
On the pitch.
40-pound granite stones.
They're heavy. Have you ever done it before,
no,
Andrew?
I never have.
No, it's a launch. You really do not have to get too much going on that thing to launch across, which is exactly what the hard part of the game is that if you launch it too far, you ain't going to get any points.
Well, watching the Olympics, I always saw the guys with the brooms, and I thought, that's how I'm going to get into the Olympics. I'm going to be the broom guy.
A sweeper.
Yeah.
Well, I hate to disappoint you, but at Kaiser Tiger, probably for insurance reasons, they do not have the sweepers.
Oh.
No one gets to use the broom, which makes sense. They
just
keep you off the ice, and you just get to throw that stone. All right, Andrew Herman, where can people find out more about all these stories?
DNAinfo.com/Chicago.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. John Hansen filling in for Steve Bertrand, and I'm joined by Janae Myers, who's the CEO of Chicago Cares, which is an incredible organization that takes a lot of the thinking out of volunteering. Janae, I don't know if there's a better way to put it.
That makes it easy.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. So how, really quickly, explain overall what you guys do.
Sure. So Chicago Cares is one of the city's largest organizations that help mobilize volunteers. And we're mobilizing volunteers to really build a stronger and more unified Chicago. That's our mission, right? We're trying to take volunteers, average Joe and Jane Chicagoans, as well as corporate volunteers, et cetera, who just want to give back and do more. And we want to harness that love and power for the city and put it, channel it in the right directions and get them working out in the community.
I imagine you're feeling a lot of love and power now. At the end of the year, this is when obviously people are focused on this stuff.
It is, and it's so interesting. It's a couple factors, right? We've talked about that with the election. Certainly people are feeling moved to action, but normally during the holidays, it starts at Thanksgiving, goes through Christmas, and when it's cold out, right, people think of others more. And I think that's an incredible thing to continue to encourage, but one of the things we like to say is, you know, the shelters and the food pantries are overwhelmed during this time of year with wonderful volunteers that they still need, so you certainly don't want to turn people away, but we need volunteers all year round.
Yeah,
right?
So keep on thinking about it. Put it on your calendar in 2017, February 1, just make a note, Chicago Cares. So individuals can help, and I imagine they go to your website and you help them out, and you can find out a ton of information there. But one thing that you guys do is really cool is you partner with businesses, right, to help them do some good.
Yeah, absolutely. So Chicago Cares is not only getting, again, Joe and Jane general public out, we work with over probably 100 plus corporations each and every year to mobilize their employees. So what's called corporate social responsibility in the in the volunteer kind of terms and world, and employee engagement. So oftentimes now businesses, they look at volunteerism and employee engagement as a benefit. So as much as your medical is a benefit, right, your dental, your package, mm-hmm. kind of the vacation, your PTO time, having things to employ or to get those employees involved in as far as engagement is also a benefit.
Does it make it them feel that they're doing something obviously bigger than themselves with the volunteering, but since they're doing it as a group, they almost feel that link to their business a little bit more for providing them with that opportunity?
100%. There's teamwork that's happening in whatever activity or part of service that you're doing, right? So you're working together, but you also know you work for a company that actually values giving back to the community at large. So the community that you live and work in every day, that they actually care enough to say, I'm going to spend some resources from our company's coffers, your valuable time, which, you know, so many companies, especially downtown, it's all about services, right? So giving up that time of employees to go out and volunteer during the work week, I mean, that's incredible. And so encouraged across so many corporations all across the city. We're working with, you know, Deloitte, Accenture, Discover, Pepsi, Grosvenor, like so many other major corporations here in town that just have this sense of giving back and this real spirit to say it's important for us to put our money where our mouth is and put our people out in the community doing good work.
Does Chicago Cares fill the void for a company that maybe, you know, they want to volunteer, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of man hours to organize it. And you guys say, hey, look, we'll do it for you.
Just outsource it to us, right?
You're the best outsourcing ever been done.
We really are, because it is work. You know, I think that's what some people often think, and especially businesses, they'll come to us and they'll say, oh, you know, we want this, this, this. And we actually do request a donation in exchange for doing this work, because we have staff and people, and it takes time and effort.
And you're saving them money and time that they're managers would be doing, making this happen.
Huge, huge, huge. Because I guarantee you what we're doing at the nonprofit level is very different than at the corporate level. And it's funny. So some companies, you know, are like, oh, we can't spend that. We don't have the budget for that. They try to do it themselves and they come back next year and they're like, sign me up.
So, yes, about that donation.
Yeah, sign me up, because it is a lot of effort to manage. And I think one of the key things that Chicago Cares does, besides really managing those logistics, it's our key relationships out in the community, right? Making sure that we're working with these nonprofit and community-based organizations, really determining what is the need and then how to best utilize volunteers. And then managing those bodies is really not easy, right?
No,
right. It's a finely orchestrated kind of dance.
You mentioned a lot of the bigger companies and the corporations. Do small businesses come to you often?
Yes, small businesses as well. I mean, we can do volunteer events from anywhere from 25 people up to 500 to 1,000.
Wow.
So the range is huge, and it's just a matter of what you want to do as a company. We have a great company. It's a financial services firm, and they have 60 employees. But they have all of their employees participate in kind of, this year they're doing an adopt a school in Englewood. They're not only doing a huge project with Chicago Cares, but they're trying to figure out ways to give back, right? during these cold months. You know, they're helping to supply hats and gloves and coats and stuff to the students at the school. And they just have really garnered this great relationship with the principal and the community to say, what more can we really do to help out? And it's gotten those employees incredibly engaged and vested in what's happening in Englewood, when before, a bunch of these folks who work down, you know, on Michigan Avenue would never have known.
You mentioned the Englewood, the school there, but what other partners do you guys have that you work with that, you know, if you're listening right now and you're maybe a middle manager or you work at a company and you want to encourage your bosses to do it, I guess make the selling point. What are some of the great partners you guys have?
Sure. So besides Chicago Public Schools, we have an excellent relationship with them. We also work with homeless shelters like La Casa Norte, which is for families and teens. We work with food pantries. There's tons of tiny food pantries all across the city that always need volunteers. We work with or agencies and organizations that have, like, adults with disabilities, right? So Misericordia, mm-hmm. and other places where we can send volunteers as well. Domestic violence shelters, House of the Good Shepherd, those kinds of places where folks are going. So it's kind of, as an organization, as a business, whatever issue area or pillar that might be interesting to you that fits in with your business and your business values, we guarantee you have a relationship out in Chicago where we can make that fit.
Are these relationships with these corporations and businesses, is that a big part of your funding and
yes.
how you guys are able to operate and help individuals do it who may not have that ability to make a donation?
Yes. So 85% of our total budget is coming from corporate funding. And that corporate funding, that donation that they give to us, we're able to use that for the general calendar that's at ChicagoCares.org, where, again, average Chicagoans can just go and volunteer for free practically any day of the week. There's multiple things to choose from. So without that corporate funding, we wouldn't be able to have the budget to fund all these other projects all across the city.
So if you're a business, if you're a manager, you're part of a small or a large business and you don't do enough volunteering and you want to do more.
Call me.
I know, right? Yeah. Don't give out your cell phone number,
Janae.
We need to give you a little bit of a holiday. But no, I was just going to say, just to recap, it doesn't only help you retain employees and obviously the benefits to the individual group and partner that you're working with, but it also makes sure that individuals who want to volunteer and don't have money can do it too. Like, it funds everything else.
Yes. It's this excellent spiral effect of just really being able to do good and do more by volunteering.
Our producer just asked if a judge ordered you recently to do community hours. I know that's not what you might mainly do. Can they go to you?
Yes, they can. But there are only some places that they can go,
okay.
right? Like, so they can't go to the domestic violence shelters. They
right.
can't do certain things with children. So, but all those guidelines are on the website.
Well, that's the other thing is that you mentioned that to me before in times we've talked, there is an opportunity for everyone.
Yes.
Not everyone wants to work with kids or is best at working with kids.
Some should just plant trees.
And you can do that too.
It is oftentimes, you know, some people just shouldn't work with people. Some people should plant things and garden and et cetera. But we need that, right?
Yes.
So there really is something for everybody. So we just encourage, again, all Chicagoans to really take a look and, again, to implore to these businesses that come work with Chicago Cares. We're going to make it incredibly easy for you to figure out how to do more good and how to give back.
Janae Myers, it is always a pleasure to chat with you. ChicagoCares.org. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you, John. Happy to do it.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're going to be talking with Ali Marotti from the Chicago Tribune about unused vacation days. And a lot of people are texting in. Most of them are calling people stupid for not using vacation days. But apparently a lot of us don't. Unused vacation days, which seems like such a sin. But I bet if you talk to your kids, your friends, or whoever you might be able to chat with during the day, you're going to find out that a lot of people, in fact, don't use their vacation days. And Ali Marotti from the Chicago Tribune, the numbers kind of bear that out, right?
Yeah, so more than half of people who get paid vacation days don't use all their days.
And we're talking don't use a lot of them.
Yeah, it's not just one or two days, which is what I would have assumed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the average number was 19 leftover days, which is crazy.
That is insane. Although having said that, you and I talked before we went on air about if you leave any unused days. And I think it just kind of depends. And with the job market changing as it is, people having more flexible positions with more nebulous sort of time off things, people kind of like to bank them.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the experts I spoke with for the story said that technology is kind of caught like making these vacation days a casualty, right? Because we give people the phones that they can use, the laptops they can work from home, and then they're either working from home and not using their days, or they're feeling like they have to be connected and they can't use their days.
So even the days that they use are not real vacation days.
Yeah. seems to be.
I think that's something we can all relate to. I know that myself personally, unless in a couple of weeks I'll be using mine, I'm going on a cruise. And my favorite thing about a cruise is you just put your phone away and you can't use it because there's no internet, or you're in the middle of the ocean, you can't access anything. And we've had a lot of texters say the same thing, that vacation just has changed so much because your boss can find you.
Yep.
Is it similar? So I know you kind of compared in your article for the Tribune some of the other countries, and I think it comes as no surprise that the Europeans are way better at taking vacations than we are.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the expert I talked to, she said it doesn't have to be this way. You know, we don't have to be France, for example. We just kind of have to go back to where we were before the internet came about, which about 2000 is kind of when we started not using our days so much as we used to. And so it's just a matter of planning. You know, your calendar on your phone, things are automatically filling up, and if you don't block out vacation time there, you might never get a chance to use it.
I find it interesting that a lot of people always like to, knocking on millennials is like one of the favorite pastimes of the middle-aged generation.
It sure is.
And that's been a tradition for centuries of people knocking the generation after them. But I was kind of surprised that millennials using them even more infrequently.
Yep. So they're kind of the biggest hoarders of vacation days. There's one in four workers, and it's the younger millennials. It's ages 18 through 25 who say they didn't use any vacation days this year.
That seems insane.
Compared to baby boomers and Gen Xers, you know, I think Gen Xers were the lowest. I think like 6% of them said that they didn't use any vacation days. So, you know, I think it's just a matter of millennials wanting to kind of break those stereotypes that you hear about them and wanting to prove that they're not lazy and spoiled and all of that. And also they're new in their career, so they feel like they have something to prove.
I also wonder if the fact that millennials change jobs pretty frequently these days, every year or two, they seem to find a new position. A lot of them probably haven't even accrued the vacation days to be able to use them. Are there any reasons for why we leave so many on the table that people look at?
Yeah, so there's different reasons, mm-hmm. you know. Number one, it's kind of just like wanting to impress your boss, like I said, not wanting to look lazy, all of that. And then the other biggest thing is that people are kind of taking advantage of this policy that lets them roll their vacation days mm-hmm. over, which is great. You know, maybe they're planning for a big life event or an even bigger trip next year, which, you know, jealous of
mm-hmm,
that.
Right.
So, yeah, and it's just these other work things, like kind of fear of the mountain of work that's going to be awaiting them when they get back from unplugging and all of those things that, you know, I'm sure all of us are familiar with.
847 says vacation days are precious. If anyone wants to donate any unused ones, that we can send over the text message. I don't know. A lot of companies do have banks that you can put it in for FMLA or something along those lines that people take advantage of. I know my company, my day job with WCIU-TV, we are able to roll over 1 week. I think that's a pretty common thing. But I'm losing one this year because I'm going to lose it. And I almost want to have a funeral for this unused vacation day because it's so precious to me. 708 says that, what are vacation days? I know that's a common thing that people say. And 847 says, I'm a nurse. I work for a hospital. But sometimes planned days off don't go so well because people often ask to get covered shift. And I see that a lot in firefighters and first responders, and especially with holidays being such a different thing as well. And so I guess the lesson here is, and as a bosses always say, use them, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's the big thing. Vacations are good for employees, and they're good for employers too, because you need time off, kind of fuels your creative fire, and that's good for everyone. So not using these vacation days, another really interesting thing is that basically, you know, if you're not using them and you're losing them, it's kind of like saying that you're working for free.
Yeah,
right?
It is.
And there was one study that came out that said, like, that last year, or in 2015, that was to the tune of $61 billion of wasted benefits that are out there. So kind of, you know, on a bigger scale, puts it in perspective, I guess.
Yeah, if you're complaining about how much money you make, I mean, vacation is a benefit that is yours. You should take full advantage of it and stick it to the man as much as you can, I guess you could say. All right, Allie, where can we find you on Twitter? I know that's how a lot of people, us millennials, love to find each other.
Yep, so I'm at Allie Marotti. That's A-L-L-Y-M-A-R-O-T-T-I.
From the Chicago Tribune. Allie, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.